Hey, Bankless Nation, happy first week of November. David, what time is it?
Oh, it is a Friday weekly roll-up time because, like always, it's always a crazy week in crypto. And so we are going to roll that week up in the Friday Bankless weekly roll-up.
David, you're on the road right now. You're in New York City, NFT NYC. That's an NFT conference. How's that going, man? What's the vibe been like?
I actually don't know because I never went to a single NFT conference event. I've only been going to the peripheral satellite events, and those have been absolutely fantastic. We'll talk a lot more at the end, but yeah, I listened to the famous Wu-Tang album that got bought by PleaserDAO.
Oh my God, man. How was it?
At this, I'm not really the biggest Wu-Tang fan.
Okay.
The first song, pretty good. Next two songs, whatever.
Did Wu-Tang people like it?
The Wu-Tang people really liked it. And then like, there was like the fourth song that had this great like trumpet riff. And the whole entire room was just like vibe into that song. Started bopping their heads.
Is this playing off the same? Like, this is a CD, right? It's a compact disc.
Yeah, so it's a CD, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so like, what happens if that thing gets scratched?
Okay, like, so it is scratched because
God.
Martin freaking Shkreli used it as a coaster. He used the CD as a coaster, so he scratched the shit out of the face. Sorry for swearing. Yeah, dude. Why would he do that? Because that's his brand.
He's a villain.
Yeah. Okay. It's literally just the perfect level of a villain.
So it has some, like, I guess some scratches in it. Does the track skip? Try to remember what CDs
do anyway. It sounded great. Yeah, awesome. Like, and the acoustics in the room were phenomenal.
Yeah.
Overall, it's been a great week. Seeing a lot of people, like always at all conferences that I only see online, but got to see them in real life. Met Cami Russo in person, so that was great. Chatted with her for a while. Always a good time at the crypto conferences.
Are people feeling like bullish on NFTs still? It's been a phenomenal year. It's got to be feeling bullish, right? But what's the vibe
like? People were it's like, oh guys, is this the top? Remember in 2018 CoinDesk where we had the Lambos outside of the conference?
Like,
there's like toppy conversations going on, but there have been toppy conversations going on in crypto for
there
like I don't know a year now.
Toppy conversations in like for NFT specifically, were like March or April, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you know, people right. felt like, and then there was kind of a lull, and then it came back even stronger. I don't know. What's your personal take on this?
Yeah, apparently at the conferences there are a lot of people like pitching terrible NFT ideas.
Yeah,
I heard some person was trying to pitch somebody else about supporting Afghan women oppressed by the Taliban using the Stellar Network. Like, when's the last time you heard about the Stellar Network, Ryan? Like,
things like this just doesn't
make any sense. Yeah,
that always happens.
Yeah, so there are some weird shenanigans going around. Apparently, that was closer to the actual NFT conferences, not the satellite events. So I didn't get the full face of that, but there was a number of like parties, like the Audius party I was at and a few other of the like related NFT events. I didn't recognize a single person. It was extreme. And like that was a common through line of all the friends that I've known in crypto for the last few years.
Different.
A
crowd.
Lot of us, completely different crowd. Like
wow.
brand new people. And we have a take to talk about later.
Yeah, we
at the
do
end
have
show,
a take.
Like, brand new people that are just no one is familiar with, like
new
getting
cohort.
into the world for the first time. Yeah.
I feel like that's especially true of NFTs. Anyway, guys, we have a fantastic show for you today on the roll up. We're talking about a few things. First of all, Facebook with the name change, pulling a Prince on us, actually not changing their name to a symbol. But Facebook becomes Meta. What's up with that? A pivot into the metaverse. Also, some airdrops coming your ways. If you are a .eth, have a .eth domain, ENS, we're going to talk about that. Also, there was a CryptoPunk that sold for $500 million.
Not mine, sadly.
Half a billion? That wasn't yours?
No.
That's right. David would sell his CryptoPunk. I was, you know, going to ask that, but we talked about that a few roll-ups ago. You would sell for $500 million.
I would
sell
for $500 million.
Okay.
Yes, I would.
And,
yes, let it be known. If there's any takers out there.
McDonald's with the McRib NFT. That doesn't feel toppy at all, does it? Quentin Tarantino
not
as well.
Slightest.
We mentioned that. The Matrix releasing NFTs as well. And Reddit with the biggest Web3 pivot ever. We're going to cover all of that and more on the weekly rollups. As you know, this comes at you every Friday morning. We try to pack as much the week in crypto into your mind as possible. David, before we get into the main show, got to talk about a couple of things. The first is this: permissionless conference tickets. Okay, this is a big DeFi metaverse conference that we are putting on next year with our friends at Blockworks. The website's just been updated. The tickets are now released. There might not be any left. I gotta warn you. So tickets were released maybe a little earlier this week, and I'm not sure if they're going to be left by the time you listen to this. Every 2 weeks.
Could they get released every 2 weeks? Batch release. Right? It's always a new cycle, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Batch release. So if you didn't get them this time, get them next time. But the thing is, they increase in price every single 2 weeks. So you want to get them early if you can. I think the price now is $418. When we started, the price was $15. $15.59. You might recognize those digits. $15.59. But now it's $418. Okay, this is just going to keep going up. If you are a Bankless subscriber, of course, a premium member, you get a discount on this, a 30% discount. What's the value of that? It's a $100 and something.
It also keeps on going up.
Keeps on going up as well. So make sure you catch that. The speakers are going to be hot. The tracks are amazing. David and I are helping to plan all of this. So check out that conference. Also, another thing to check out is the Dharma Wallet. David, you want to tell them about Dharma Wallet?
Yeah, Dharma Wallet is the easiest way to get you and your friends into the world of crypto, into the world of DeFi. If you guys have gotten into crypto without Dharma, you probably went the route of sending your money to Coinbase or Gemini, which takes a while, takes like 7 days. Then you have to buy Ether, send that to your MetaMask or your Ledger. And then if you want to go onto Polygon, you got to send it to make an L1 transaction to Polygon. Then you need to get gas on the Polygon network. That's a whole mess. Then you have to prove it.
The old days.
The old days, but no longer, because the Dharma Wallet will do all of this for you in just 2 to 3 minutes. You can connect with your actual bank account with Plaid, which again is just like logging into your bank account, and then you can send money into the Polygon network. It's a smart contract wallet, and it's connected into Polygon, and they have a ton of cool features. So it is the fastest portal to get fiat money into the world of crypto where it belongs.
No gas fees.
Download Dharma. No gas fees. There's a link in the show notes. And I believe that if you sign up with the link in the show notes, you'll get airdropped $50 worth of Ether on the Polygon network to get your life on an L2 started. So go check that out.
Yeah, you got to make a purchase. But if you make a purchase above $500, you get $50 in free ETH on Polygon. So check that out using the link in the show notes. All right, David, you ready to get to it, man?
Yeah, let's
market
do it.
Time. Market time. Let's talk Bitcoin. What are we doing?
Bitcoin had a flat-ish week, up a little bit. Started the week at $60,000, which was the low, hit a high of $64,000, and currently at $62,000, so up roughly 4 or 5% on the week.
Good job, Bitcoin. 4 or 5%, not too bad. But ETH, another story, all-time high week for ETH. A few all-time highs were hit this week. I feel like celebrating every single one of them. Where are we right now, and what was the all-time high, David?
Yeah, ETH started at $4,200, the new all-time high. $4,675 was hit a little bit more than 24 hours ago, roughly 36 hours ago at the time of recording. We are currently clocking in at $4,485.
Next milestone is 5K, I feel like. That's coming right up. But are we up? How much are we up on the week?
We are up 15% on the week. It looks like we dipped a little bit before I wrote that number down. So maybe about like 13 or 14%.
Why? Do you think this is like the Facebook Meta news? Not to front run that. We're going to talk about that in news a little bit. But do you think there's a metaverse story connected here? Or do you think this is just the market kind of catching up to what ETH should be?
There are so many stories about what ETH should be. There's NFTs, there's the metaverse, there's DeFi, there's scaling, there's the merge, ultra-scalable Ethereum. Like, people are getting that their heads wrapped around that. There's so many stories to tell why this number is going up. A lot of stories means a lot of reasons for a number to go up.
I still think it's low, to be honest. I still think the price of ETH is undervalued, even at these prices. Mm-hmm. You guys know that. If you've been hanging out with Bankless for any time soon, we are ultra bullish on this asset.
The listeners are like, we know, guys.
It's like, shut up already, okay? We know. We already have our bags packed. All right. ETH Bitcoin ratio, what is that looking like, David?
Yeah, again, 3 green weeks in a row for the ETH Bitcoin ratio, clocking in at 0.0734. And so ever since the Bitcoin ETF, the Bitcoin Ether ratio has done really, really well. And again, has not spent very, very little time higher than this, especially in the last 6 months, but also definitely ever.
Wow, so, David, are we getting close to, we're getting close to like the 2 year, 3 year, all time high for the ratio.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a lot of people I know Anthony Cesano pays attention to this ratio a lot. And like, I know he's waiting for that to break through.
He's frothing at the mouth.
Yeah. He's like, just don't tweet.
Yeah. This is one to continue watching, but like, this is also an indicator, I would say, of the continued crypto bull run, right? If this ratio is gaining steam. Yes. Then it means bull run in full effect. This is another bull run indicator. But dude, wait, this number is way down today. Total locked value in DeFi. I'm gonna go with it.
That's a bug broken on graph. The DeFi Pulse page.
Yeah, this should not happen.
I'm gonna go with a broken graph. Oh, you know what that was? Go down to Aave. That might have been a lot of people withdrawing from Aave.
No way.
Because they're Aave's number two now. Aave had that bug exploit, which got fixed, so nothing bad happened. But a lot of people pulled funds out of Aave.
Look at this. This happened from November 3rd to the 4th, right? And we went down 105 billion to 87 billion, for those of you who can't see on the screen.
With that's a bug.
Does feel like a bug.
Page.
But so let's call it, we're still above, I think we're still above 100 billion. Let's say that.
That means we can make up these numbers, right?
We want it to be over 100 billion, so therefore it is this week.
How do you feel like it should be, Ryan?
I feel like this should be a trillion, to be honest. But, I'm going to be conservative on today's episode. We'll wait. We'll bide our time. How about the DeFi Pulse Index? This is an index of the top DeFi tokens, the blue chips, as it were, up or down on the week.
Up on the week. Finally, the DPI had a great week this week, up 9% on the week. Started the week at $330, ended the week at roughly $375.
Signs of life, David. Are you liking that? Some signs of life here. How about this?
Ether has way more signs of life than DPI.
So we're still going down on the DPI to ETH ratio, huh?
Yeah.
This has been a sad story.
I mean, it put a little bit of a bottom. Again, not a bottom, but like hit 0.078, climbed up to 0.085. But again, it is a nice linear slope down.
But just remember, folks, David reminded us last time, if you swap out those DeFi tokens for another set of DeFi tokens and retrofit the data, then David was still right about this ratio.
That's exactly right. David's never wrong.
That should be the takeaway here. Not DeFi season yet, or at least it's more ETH season than it is DeFi season. So to the extent that remains the case, this ratio continues to drop a little bit. But let's talk about the best of all worlds, which is the BED index, Bankless BED index. That is Bitcoin, ETH, and the DPI all inside one token. That's a third, a third, a third. What are we looking at on the week?
Yeah, BED had a good week because it is the best index in all of DeFi. Started the week at $172, hit a new high of $192, currently clocking in at $181 overall up. How much percent on the week? I don't know. 5%.
5%. Call that 5%. So guys, of course, you can get into BED, get with this index. It's a simple purchase. Go to the indexcoop.com/BED and purchase that. It's actually up 60% over the 90 days in terms of, close to 60% in terms of, the 90 day increase in this index. So it's starting to get closer to being sort of a staple type index of the crypto markets, which is awesome to see. All right, let's look at layer two BEAT as well. This tracks how much value is locked inside of true layer twos. Those are chains that are backed by the economic security guarantees of the Ethereum network. David just added a cool $1 billion in the past week, from last week to this week, getting close to $5 billion. Pretty crazy.
Clocking in at $4.93 billion, up 21% on the week. Arbitrum, up 20% in total value locked in layer twos. Optimism, clocking in at plus 85% on the week, almost doubling the value locked in Optimism. A lot of cool things are happening on Optimism. Optimism breaking through that $500 million level. So congratulations to the team. Also, Loopring, clocking in at a doubling and 98% off of, I think, speculation because something to do with GameStop and Loop Ring integration.
They did make some key hires of Loop Ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's interesting. That's... And also, my one equity that I own that's not crypto, GME stocks, doing very well, by the way.
It's all related, isn't it? It all comes back to crypto. What's cool about mm-hmm. this, I think, is particularly with Arbitrum and Optimism, we're seeing this growth without a token incentive, right? So mm-hmm. we're seeing so many other layer one communities, so different layer ones, not Ethereum, giving away like millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in token incentives mm-hmm. to come yield farm on their chains. All right. And Optimism and Arbitrum are not doing this, and they're still getting like massive growth week over week. So that's good to see. Wait till they dial up the tokens, if they ever do. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens there. Also, Ultrasound Money, ETH is becoming Ultrasound Money. It just passed a big milestone. What is that, David?
750,000 Ether has been burned as of this week. 761,000 Ether. That's more Ether than I have. Closing in on the 1 million Ether mark.
A little bit more, huh? Just a little bit. More. Just past David's bags here. This is cool, too. I wanted to actually correct this because I think I said that last week, I think I said that ETH had 10x the transaction fees over the past 7 days of Bitcoin. And I was actually wrong. And someone reminded me of this. Ethereum actually had 100x the transaction fee revenue of Bitcoin mm-hmm. over a 7 day period of time. So I was like, 10x off on that number. I knew it was a lot bigger, but over the last 7 days, look, man, Ethereum had almost $50 million worth of transaction fee revenue. And back to what we said mm-hmm. last week, what do blockchains do? Blockchains sell blocks. This is their transaction fee revenue. And I guess a year ago, 2 years ago, it was like a fight between Bitcoin and ETH. Like every mm-hmm. day, it's like who's kind of going to have more transaction fee revenue. Here's Bitcoin, a very distant number on this chart. Not even $1 million in transaction fee revenue over the past 7 days. So it's super interesting to see, right? The thesis for Ethereum has always been you make block space more valuable, then the asset becomes more valuable. And of course, EIP 1559 kicked that into high gear so that there's this immediate feedback loop. But it seems to be the case that this is happening. Revenue numbers going up for Ethereum block space. Any other takes on this, David?
Yeah, there is a direct connection between the amount of fees your blockchain collects and the soundness of the money. And if you have not yet learned how to articulate that association, there's a ton of stuff to go and read on the Bankless newsletter, Ultra Scalable Ethereum, Ultrasound Money with Justin Drake, tons of things. So make sure you understand the relationship between block space demand and soundness of the money. It's a really important concept.
The only one that's closest is Binance Smart Chain. And like, I don't even know what they do with their numbers.
It's wash traded.
Okay. Let's talk about this too. Last week was actually the first week that Ethereum actually mm-hmm. had negative issuance, David. And we've seen some mm-hmm. milestones on this Ultrasound Money thing in the past. In fact, like mm-hmm. the first day, I remember an individual block, maybe it was the mm-hmm. first day or the first 2 days after EIP 1559, an individual block that had negative issuance. I remember being really excited to see that. Like, it's happening. But now we're mm-hmm. hitting all of these milestones. Talk about this for a minute.
Yeah. I think it was like just a couple hours after EIP 1559. Everyone was scraping the block EtherScan trying to find the first ultrasound block.
Yeah, so that's right.
It took people a couple hours. And then I think just a couple weeks later, we had our first ultrasound day where we had our first ultrasound hour where all the blocks over the hour were ultrasound. They were burning collectively more Ether than was being issued. A couple weeks after that, we had our first ultrasound day, 24 hours of more Ether being burned than was being issued. We have now hit our first week of total issuance going down rather than up due to Ether burn. And so at some point, we're going to be repeating this, but it's going to be a month. And then at some point, it'll just be every month moving forward into the future. Ryan, are we seeing the current limit of the Ether supply right now? Like that could be happening as of this week. The total supply of Ether capped out. That is a possibility.
That's true. I mean, Justin Drake, when he put some numbers on this, predicted this in April. He thought that Ether supply would never get above 120 million. And I don't know what the total supply looks like, but you're right.
We're looking at it right now. The total supply is 118.2 million. Oof. So
over, man, under, on, do we ever hit 120 million? What do you think?
Oh, under.
Yeah, I definitely under for sure, because this isn't even getting started yet. Okay. Mm-hmm. Once the merch happens, so like we're maybe 6 months away for that. Over. It's over. It's done. It's gone. Right. So a reduction of 4%. So this is an immediate reduction of 4% annualized issuance. So we're going to be ultrasound month every single month, every year. Wouldn't be surprised if we start to get ultrasound decades, David, under our belts with this. I mean, we'll see what this looks like over the long run.
As soon as we hit the merge, it's just ultrasound now and for forever. Right? Yeah. So it's just a race to get to the merge.
Unless you think block space, Ethereum block space is going to drastically decrease in demand. Is there any world where that happens?
I don't think so. And there's a take that we have later to talk about. What happens when you increase the block space available? People just use more of it.
Yeah.
And so like even with sharding, we're going to increase the amount of block space available. People are just going to use more. They're going to transact more.
And that's the thing. It's not even going to be humans. It's going to be other chains that are actually using this block space and being secured by it.
Absolutely. There's no coincidence that we are breaking all-time highs this week, and that this is all-time high week, and then also ETH burn ultrasound week as well. Like, that is not as a coincidence. Like, bull markets bring in fees. Yep. And so, like, really, this is a game of, are we in all-time high season, right? Like, are we in bull market season? Are we out of the crab season, and we're just going to keep on yeeting into new all-time highs? If that's true, then we might actually be in ultrasound territory now and for forever. If that bull market can carry us into the merge, like that's a possibility.
Yeeting into all-time highs, yeeting into the bull market. That's what we're doing right now. I love it. Yeah. Top assets by market cap. This is all top assets by market cap. It doesn't have things like gold, but it has things that you can like use generally trade on exchanges. So number one, of course, actually not of course, I was surprised to see this. The top asset in the world worth $2.5 trillion with a T is Microsoft now. No longer Apple, it's Microsoft actually. Then after that, it's Apple and Google, and then some like oil and gas companies, Amazon, etc. All the way down to number seven is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the seventh largest asset in the world that you can buy on an exchange of this type.
Right behind Tesla, yeah.
Right behind Tesla. Well, that's interesting. And then right ahead of Facebook. And then if you keep scrolling past Berkshire, past Nvidia, NVIDIA, you get to Ethereum at number 13, almost breaching into the top 10 assets in the world. That's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, Ether is within striking distance. I think it's just like something like 12 or 15 more percent, which is just like, hey, that's just like one good week away from becoming a top 10 global asset. So
you got to love
this.
It's
going to be exciting to watch.
You think Jamie Dimon's looking at this and being like, oh, I'm number 14 and Ethereum just passed me. Now it's over for JP Morgan. It's like, I was wrong about, I was wrong about crypto.
I don't think he's saying that.
Probably not, but maybe he should be. And along with the rest of the banks, even Visa is behind Ethereum at this point, which all makes sense because Ethereum is a network of networks. It is a global settlement layer. It is a monetary system. It is a money. It is not like all of these other things, aside maybe a little bit like Bitcoin. I think they'll continue rising in the charts. David, that's it for the markets. And we've got some hot releases coming up for folks. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Bankless is proud to be supported by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum, which is what Ryan and I call a money robot. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. Something brand new in the Uniswap ecosystem is the Uniswap Grants program is now accepting applications for grants. We have been saying this for a while and we'll say it again. DAOs have money and they are in need of labor. If you think that you have something to contribute to the Uniswap DAO, apply for a grant to Uniswap. Just look at the size of the Uniswap treasury. It's almost $3 billion. This mountain of capital is looking for labor. Do you have something of value to contribute to the Uniswap DAO? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a Uni grant at unigrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. That's exactly what we did to get Uniswap to be a sponsor for Bankless, and you can do the same for your project. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless. Gemini is the world's most trusted cryptocurrency exchange. I've been a customer of Gemini since I first got into crypto in 2017, and it's been my main exchange of choice to make my crypto buys and sells. Gemini is available in all 50 states and in over 50 countries worldwide, and on Gemini there are markets for over 30 various different crypto assets, including many of the hot DeFi tokens, and it's one of the few exchanges that has liquid DAI markets. Gemini just launched their Earn program, where you can earn up to 7.4% interest on 26 various crypto assets. If you're tired of paying fees in DeFi, or you don't want to worry about DeFi exploits, but you still want to earn interest on your crypto assets, Gemini Earn is the product for you. Another product I'm stoked to get my hands on is the Gemini Crypto Back Credit Card, which gives you 3% cash back on all of your purchases, but paid to you in your preferred crypto asset. When I get my Gemini credit card, I'm going to make sure that I get my cash back in ETH, so whenever I buy something, I get a little bit of ETH bonus back to me at the same time. You can open up a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/gobankless. And if you trade more than $100 within the first 30 days after sign up, you'll be gifted a free $15 Bitcoin bonus. Check them out at gemini.com/gobankless.
All right, guys, we are back with the hot releases of the week. The first is this ENS, which is the Ethereum name service. You might have seen those .ETHs all over Twitter. You might have a .ETH yourself that is registered to the ENS, Ethereum name service. Well, now ENS is issuing a token. They are doing an airdrop to all holders of .ETH accounts. What's going on here, David?
Yeah. So we need to, when I was talking to Brantley even forever ago, he was always saying like, they would receive money from selling the ENS names.
Lots of money, right?
Lots of money, tons of money. And like, they consider themselves like public goods, right? Not a private company. They don't want to be a private company that is just like operating what is a core function of the Ethereum system, which is .ETH names. And so they've been sitting on all of this Ether, not knowing what to do with it, not knowing how to structure like this company. And then the whole DAO revolution starts. And I think it's just very, very obvious that the .ETH side of Ethereum becomes community operated and community governed. And so, you know, what's so fantastic about .ETH names is that it's so easy to identify who has them. And so they just airdropped they will be airdropping some ENS governance tokens to .ETH holders. And so there are some different parameters as to how much you are getting. You are getting one if you own a .ETH. You are getting double that if you actually linked that .ETH name to an actually Ethereum address. Then you are also getting a multiplier based on how long you've actually had that linked. And so if you have linked your ENS Ethereum address and you've done it for a long time, you might get some nice airdrops coming your way soon.
Hell yeah, man. That means if you've been listening to Bankless, when we started talking about ENS addresses back in 2019, and we created tactics on how to actually register them, and set them up correctly, then you will definitely get this airdrop, which is super exciting. 137,000 accounts, .ETH holders, which is great. One important note, though, is they're not rewarding like squatters in this mechanism, right? So if you bought like, I don't know, 100 names and you're just sitting on them, you're not getting any amplifier for owning more .ETH names. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. So if you bought 100 ENS names and you're just sitting on them, didn't link them to your Ethereum address, you are just getting one share's worth of an airdrop. And so it's unique addresses that linked their ENS name to their Ethereum wallet for amount of time. I think it's a great mechanism. There's a link in the show notes if you want to check out more details on that. Overall, 25% of the total airdrop will be given out to .ETH holders. 25% will go to the ENS contributors, and then 50% to the DAO community treasury, which I really like that model. This is Kevin Iwaki shared this model, and I put this idea in my head where it's 50% for the past and then 50% for the future, right? So everyone who's worked on the project so far, so 25% to the airdrop, 25% to the team, and then 50% to the community treasury, which goes and funds the future DAO, right? Actually, people that want to start the DAO.
This is super cool. I think this is one of the ones I'm most excited about since probably Uniswap. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because of such a large distribution. I mean, there's so many .ETH holders, so many ENS users. And so this is getting out there. But like in general, they kind of had to go down this path, right? Because they had a multisig, they had a treasury, and they had a small set of individuals who were really responsible for that multisig. I don't know, it was like 7 to 10 members of the Ethereum community who had access to that multisig. And of course, you know, it requires some majority of owners to sign off on transactions. But this turns that multisig over to the DAO, over to governance, over to the users, over to the community. It's a very Web3 concept. And it's super cool to see. So we are actually having Nick and Brantley from ENS on our State of the Nation on Tuesday. I think more details will come early next week on how you can pick up this airdrop. Of course, if you are a Bankless Premium member, we dropped the Ultimate Guide to Airdrops last week. And if you did,
Number 20?
Number 16. 25 hypothetical potential. We're not sure if they're going to airdrop, but you might want to check them out in case they do. Sort of opportunities. Number 16 was Ethereum Name Service. Had some folks ping us earlier in the week and be like, oh my God, I'm glad I saw that. Registered a .eth domain, got started on it. Now I'm eligible for that airdrop. So Bankless Premium members get that. We will include a link in the show notes so you can check that resource out. It's evergreen, 24 more on this list, potentials. So take a look at that.
You can be damn sure that every time an airdrop happens, we will be reminding you that this airdrop
guide exists. I'm just saying, it's just like, why not go?
Do your homework. Do your homework.
Why not get free airdrops, folks? Like, why not just put in some effort? Crypto pays you to learn about crypto. So take the extra step here. Anyway.
Before we move on, there are a couple more dynamics about the ENS DAO now that I think are worth pulling apart. DAOs inherently have like a funding problem at Genesis because like they just mint a token. They don't really have any money yet. That's not true with ENS. They have that very large stack of Ether from all of the ENS sales. And so the ENS DAO is going to have a very large treasury of Ether behind it. And so they are going to be able to fund themselves right off the bat. The ENS team is giving all of that Ether to the DAO. So that's pretty cool. I don't know how much that is.
I forgot about that too. But it's like, it's got to be a lot because when we said the DAO has a lot of money, all of that money is in ETH, as you said. So when you register a .eth domain, you're paying for it in ETH. And if you paid for it in ETH back in like 2018, 2019, that ETH is worth a heck of a lot more in dollar values. Then it's like your $5, your $10 to register is now a 10x from that, right? So I'm sure it's a substantial treasury.
Yeah, and then the other side of this is that the ENS team, they never raised anything from any funds at all.
Yeah, that's right.
So zero funds own ENS, right? Like this token was just born. No, there were no VCs, no one backing it. And so it's going to be one of the coolest. I think it's going to be one of the coolest launches of all time. Top 10 launches.
Nice top job, 10 guys. Launches. Top 10 launches. Sounds like another Bankless blog post. But this is like, the distribution is great. I'm excited about this one the way I was with Uniswap. So anyway, next week, more details on that. Let's talk about this. Maker Governance just onboarded Lido's staked ETH, that's STETH, as a collateral type. It's really cool because staked ETH is kind of like treasuries and T-bills are to dollars, right? Yep. It's sort of like, you know, you take your dollars, you put it in a risk-free asset, which is a treasury. And the reason it's risk-free is because the U.S. government can always pay you back. Why? Because they are the mint. Of course, they can print more money and always pay you back. So it's called risk-free rate of return. That's what staked ETH is. Or it can be. It does have some risk. The risk with the staking provider, like Lido, has some risk on it. So there are various forms of staked ETH. But anyway, it's really cool to see staked ETH tokenized and available as collateral. So you can get a loan against it. You can start to use it as a composable money Lego inside of the DeFi economy. Any takes here, David?
Yeah, it's just a great integration. It's a great collateral, but this is a first step of a very, very large story, which is eventually all ETH inside of DeFi is going to turn into staked ETH inside of DeFi, because why wouldn't you? You could have two collateral types, ETH and staked ETH. One stays the same and one goes up like 5-6% a year.
And they're both equally liquid.
And they're both equally liquid.
So that's the difference, right? So like with the T-bill, it's like, it's locked up, but you can't do anything with it. Like your money is kind of parked inside of that instrument. You can't, do very much with it. At least an individual can't do very much with it. But with this, you could do anything in the DeFi economy that you could do with any ERC-20.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly right. And this is the important story here is there's going to be a network effects competition for this staked ETH derivative token, right? Coinbase as a centralized staking as a service operator, probably going to release Coinbase staked ETH as a secondary currency. Any staking as a service operator, in order to compete with all the other ones, they need to generate liquidity on their staked ETH token. So they will all generate the staked ETH derivative token. Who can get their staked ETH derivative token integrated into DeFi the best is going to win. Because monies have network effects. And so this is a competition that all staking as a service providers are playing in this game. Rocket Pool also has our ETH as well. It's really nice to see these committed to decentralized versus the centralized ones start to make those moves before the centralized companies do.
Yeah, that's the collateral types I'm going to support most are the ones that are the most decentralized.
Trustless.
So, yeah, right. The most trustless forms, because those mm-hmm. are truly the most risk-free forms and right. In the best interest of the
network.
And
that's specifically the bull case for Rocket Pool and our ETH. Is Rocket Pool is trying to be the most decentralized, risk-free that there is. Yeah. Lido has done a few compromises to get there, but they are still committed to decentralization and they just want to go to market first, and that's how they have done that. Both of those are far superior than anything a centralized staking as a service company could offer.
When launch, Rocket Pool? Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Let's see you soon.
Let's get this going.
Look at this. Release from crypto.com. So we think of the crypto.coms of the world as like crypto banks. So, right. So there's sort of infrastructure that sit on top of chains. They are now supporting direct deposits and withdrawals to and from Arbitrum. A roll-up.
Nice.
We said this was going to happen. It's starting to happen. Crypto.com, I believe they were in the top like five or something apps in the Apple iTunes. You know, this is Google Android I saw. This is the Android App Store, top five apps. So like Crypto.com has a ton of customers and consumers, and now they are enabling layer two fiat withdrawals. This is fantastic to see, a much needed bridge into these ecosystems. Any thoughts here, David?
Yeah, there's going to be another race between all of these centralized companies to figure out how can they drop their users off onto much more user-friendly environments. We asked Brian Armstrong the same question on the podcast that comes out on Monday. Brian Armstrong on the podcast Monday, by the way.
Such a good episode. Oh, my God.
It was really good. Yeah. Every single exchange needs to be playing this game right now and figuring out how to, and it's not that hard. Just do it. Put it on the sidechain.
Yeah.
Allow users to withdraw it. Like, what? I don't get why this is so hard.
Yeah. Shia LaBeouf me, man. Just do it. Just do it. Just do it right now. Okay, exchanges. And look, we're going to support you if you do, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
The exchanges that I care about. So like, this is a conversation we had with Brian Armstrong, just to tease that episode a little bit more, by the way. Premium members get that tomorrow or today if you're listening to it. We asked him the question of like a couple questions, I guess, related. One was, do you regret not building Coinbase Chain? Was a question we asked him in the podcast. His answer to that was phenomenal. The other question we asked is, Binance is building a Binance Chain, right? FTX is really partnering with Solana. It feels very much like most exchanges are playing this Web 2 game. Mm-hmm. Like they onboard you to crypto and then they try to lock you into an ecosystem that they control, right? This is like the Facebook. We've seen this before. And then we kind of asked Brian Armstrong, are you going to be the crypto bank that's going to build on open, credibly neutral protocols? That was the question we posed to him. For the answer to that question, you'll have to stay tuned to the podcast. Yeah. Coming on Monday, but it's such a good answer and it's so worthwhile. I think very much the crypto banks and exchanges will be competing, and hopefully they are competing for consumers in a very Web3 way that is positive, building on top of credibly neutral open infrastructure. Layer two is one essential layer in that stack. And so maybe we see Coinbase support for layer two next.
Ryan, I actually saw Brian Armstrong last night.
You did?
Yeah, he was there. Yeah, and so again, so we were I saw him yesterday. The day before, we were recording with him in Zoom, and so I go up to him, like, "Oh, hey, Brian," and he looks at my name tag, and the name tags. Okay, this is gonna be an NFT NYC story. When you were in line, and somebody was filling out your name tag for you, they were asking you like, "What was your AIM screen name? Yeah. Not your name." What was your AIM screen name? And mine was Blackjack Davey. So like, I go up to Brian and I say, "Oh, hey, Brian. Like, hey, it's great to meet you." And he looks at me and then looks at my name tag. And I was like, "Oh, hey, Blackjack Davey." And I'm like, "No, Brian, it's David from Bankless."
Oh
like,
my God.
We were just recording, and it took him a while. Like, it's a loud party. It took him a while to
hear you.
The dots. But yeah, you know, he did not recognize me at all.
Well, the other thing, it was funny that because we were joking with Brian on the podcast, we were mm-hmm. like, he's like, "Look, we've hired so many people. I've done Bar's mm-hmm. number is like 150 right. people. I don't even know the employees that we hired on Coinbase." Right. So it's hard when you meet so many people, like for mm-hmm. that facial recognition software to keep up and like remember and put names with faces, and it's difficult. But
crypto conferences, there's the running joke that it is just so impossible, and like I will never knock him for not recognizing me, because I do the same thing for so many people.
Why
like
don't
dude
they just,
we've met like three times,
like I recognize people in the digital world by their Twitter avatars, honestly.
Yeah.
It's right. like, that is more recognizable to me. And I know some people change their Twitter avatars a lot, so that throws me off. But anyway, digital games. Let's talk about this next one. Running Phonon. What is this? This is a product by mm-hmm. Grid Plus. What does it allow you to do, David?
Yeah, Phonon is, I guess, this new kind of primitive that is being built by Grid Plus. Grid Plus, again, has the Lattice hardware wallet. And what they have done is they have made what they are calling a Phonon transfer. Now, the details for this as to how this works, I do not know, but I know the gist. And so the gist is that they sent Bitcoin, 100 Satoshis of Bitcoin, from one Grid Plus hardware wallet to another Grid Plus hardware wallet, not using Bitcoin, using the hardware. And so basically it mimics the properties of cash. It's like if I were to actually be able to give you, go and hand you physical Bitcoin, it's like that. And so Bitcoin was sent over the internet from one hardware wallet to another hardware wallet, but not using the Bitcoin blockchain. And this is also works for Ethereum too. And so we are now able to mimic the properties of physical cash and then also send it over the internet, but not actually using the networks. It's pretty crazy. Yeah, so like trustless, bare assets, and private too. Privacy is really important because like I can just like DM you some like bytes of data in this Zoom chat, and those bytes of data will be like a Bitcoin, 100 Satoshis of Bitcoin, right? And you can go redeem it.
All this sounds magic, crazy. And I don't know how it works, but it sounds super interesting. And I know Grid Plus is very much in the cutting edge of mm-hmm. hardware wallets, like the most mm-hmm. secure enclaves possible. Which is super cool. I feel like I want to learn more after this, David. And if you want to learn more, there's a link in the show notes to check mm-hmm. out some of the technical details of this. Also, DAO infrastructure tools. Man, where do you go? Is there one place you can mm-hmm. go where you can see all of the infrastructure tools available for you? Now there is. It's called daomasters.xyz. And you can look at all of the tools mm-hmm. that are required to spin up a DAO. Discord, of course, Mintgate, Gardens, OpenLaw, investing, recruiting, marketing, fundraising, payroll, all community management, all of these various tools in one place. Kind of cool to see.
This is all the infrastructure I wish I had in 2017, 2018. Like, oh, I wish I'd like to make a token. And then I was like, how to mint an ERC-20 token.
It's gotten so much better.
Like, oh, it's gotten so much better. Like, I've always wanted just like drag and drop, push button Ethereum smart contract infrastructure. And this is that. And not only that, but a bunch of infrastructure around that infrastructure too. So gosh,
this is
the golden age of infrastructure right now.
It's gotten better, but it's still going to get so much more better. It's like mm-hmm. it's going to be another 10x a year from now in terms of the tooling we'll have. So stay tuned for that, guys. Also, stay tuned. Axie Infinity, continue to crank it out. They just released on their Ronin sidechain something called mm-hmm. Katana, which is a DEX for AXS tokens and SLP tokens tradable mm-hmm. with ETH. David, what's going on here?
Yeah, Axie Infinity, famously the Axie Nation, has their total entire GDP on the Ronin sidechain, but it didn't have a DEX. And so if you wanted to swap stuff, you would have to take it back to Ethereum. So they just built their own DEX on the Ronin sidechain. So it's like Axie Infinity Nation's got its own New York Stock Exchange natively on their sidechain. And so that's probably a huge upgrade for all the Axie Infinity players out there that don't have to go back to Ethereum to start using the DeFi there.
God, look at this video, man. These Axies are so cute. The cutest creatures I've ever seen. Digital creatures, that is. Optimism, what are they doing? Optimism. EVM equivalents. We talked about that a little bit next week, but they're releasing that as a release in probably just like 7 days or so.
That's exactly right. Optimistic Ethereum coming to Optimism itself. They're upgrading their own system, going into EVM equivalents. They release a fantastic blog post. If you want to understand EVM equivalents and Alpha Leak, you do want to understand EVM equivalent. So go check out that blog post. It puts it into really simple language. There is a fundamental difference between EVM compatibility and EVM equivalence. EVM equivalence allows Optimism to ride the network effects of Ethereum. All the infrastructure tooling, the dev tooling, the node tooling, everything that's already been built out just gets to be immediately repurposed for Optimism. And that is their big competitive advantage. So congrats to the Optimism team. We're going EVM equivalent in just about 7 days.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think the real chain wars are actually going to be the chain wars between layer twos that will need to carve out their place and carve out their niche. And I feel like our Optimism's take is we are going to be the most Ethereum aligned rollup of them all, basically. So other rollups might adopt, you know, other technical implementations. They might even go to other chains, but Optimism is really aiming to be an extension of Ethereum, which is a really neat niche. And it's something that I expect they'll be able to carve out quite successfully. David, let's move to the raises of the week. Every week in crypto, there's always a massive amount of raises. We can't cover them all anymore, but we do try to cover some of the big ones.
This one's different, though.
This one's new. So what is this? DCG, this is Digital Currency Group. So Barry Silbert's firm, of course, you might know many of his products. CoinDesk is one of his products. Another one of his products is GBDC and all of the Grayscale funds that you might buy in the brokerage.
Grayscale.
Yeah, Grayscale. The
owned
thing.
By D. Yeah, exactly. The whole thing. Yeah.
So what are they doing here? What's this raise?
Just raising a casual $700 million.
Okay.
Yeah. $700 million at a $10 billion valuation.
All right. Well,
this is the 10X second unicorn. Largest... Yeah, this is the second largest crypto raise ever. I actually don't know what the first is, but I mean, this is just absolutely massive. Naturally, SoftBank is behind this because they have all the currency in the world. Congratulations to Barry Silbert. This is absolutely massive raise.
Weird headline, though, I think. I don't know who gave them this moniker. DCG wants to be crypto's Standard Oil. Yeah. We don't want Standard Oil. We don't want robber barons in the crypto
that's
industry.
That's a little weird.
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from, but whatever. Some metaphors aside.
Quick facts about Barry Silbert. Like, he was originally super supportive of Ethereum Classic for some reason. He put a ton of Ethereum Classic on his treasury. I don't know why. Also, he's also previously, this is no longer the case from what I've gathered, but there was conflicts of interest between Coinbase and digital currency, or CoinDesk and Digital Currency Group, because they didn't put up a firewall between the news arm and the fund arm of the same company. So that's raised some eyebrows. Overall, like what is it called? A conglomerate, I guess, is what this is. It's an empire. The DCG is an absolute massive
Standard
empire.
Oil. It doesn't not oil, fit. Right? Yeah. And they're definitely raking in cash. I think they've done a lot for crypto adoption. I'll totally give them that. I think overall they're healthy. They're a good actor. I think they definitely skew a bit more banker, old world, Bitcoin maximalist type. But still, I mean, this is all part of the adoption story. And I mean, wow, $10 billion valuation. That's got to raise some eyebrows. Yep. SoftBank jumping in as well. This is another one that's pretty big. The firm backed by Alan Howard, which remember, he's the massive hedge fund manager that is also backing Eric Peters' firm. We talked to Eric Peters from One River Capital Management a couple weeks ago on the podcast. Anyway, they just closed a $100 million investment in a major metaverse fund with our friend Andrew Steinwald, who about a year ago at this time, came on the Bankless podcast. Andrew has his own podcast, had his own firm. It was a very small firm at the time. And I'm going to butcher the name, David. Can you say the name for me?
Sifirmion.
Sifirmion. Okay, thank you. Sifirmion. Mm-hmm. And at the time, he was on a podcast with
Berkman.
Berkman. And he basically gave the pitch for NFTs in the metaverse. And he was like, guys, you're not going to believe us when we say this, but NFTs are going to be bigger than DeFi. And we had just come off of DeFi summer, and it felt like very
both
much
Ryan
like
and I were like, what? Get
okay.
out of here.
Like, no yeah, way. Eventually, you know, in 10 years or something, right. Sure. Like, I did believe him, but, you know, I thought it would take a longer time for it to play out. And to be fair, he probably did too. Well,
he definitely thought it happened way faster than he thought it would.
Okay, so now his firm just got $100 million in funding, his fund. So congrats to Andrew. Congrats to the people preaching
Andrew,
NFTs.
You were
in
right.
The
we were wrong.
And like, I think a lot of the people who were right about NFTs and the metaverse a year ago are now reaping the rewards on this side. It's like market validation. Now you get $100 million in your fund. Go invest for us. Totally. So congrats, Andrew Steinwald, and his entire team. And congrats for being right on the thesis. It's really cool to see.
Yeah. And again, like believing in NFTs before there was any real market validation about them, right? CryptoPunks were still like below 2 Ether, right? Like, there was no excitement about NFTs. They were just a concept.
Yeah.
And he believed in it before anyone was actually bullish on anything about NFTs.
You know what? Something really gets me excited, gets me going is like investors with conviction. Okay. There's so many people on YouTube, and I feel like in Twitter, some of these are traders, self-proclaimed traders, but some of these are like crypto influencers and like investors in the space. And they don't really invest with any conviction. Right. They don't really have a long-term thesis. They just play on whatever's popular in the narrative, right? 3 months in, 6 months in. Okay. I hate that. Like, it's just not, it's not something that I gravitate towards. Like, I like the Andrew Steinwalds of the world. I like the Olaf Carlson Wheeze in 2013. I like the Brian Armstrongs in 2012 who are like, oh, I see what this can become. I have conviction. When everyone else is going in a different direction, no one else believes, I'm going to put my flag in the ground. I'm going to build something cool. And I'm going to like invest in this space and build in this space with conviction. Those are my favorite people in crypto because all of them are playing long-term games and you should go and follow what they do at every single step. Right. And I think Andrew is one of those people. Have we said 100%. Enough good things about Andrew? I wonder if he's listening.
Andrew, we like you.
All right, what's next, David? What's this one?
Sandbox. Yeah, this is the company that Snoop Dogg is associated with. So that's how Snoop Dogg came into the world of crypto partnering with the Sandbox metaverse type avatar-ish Second Life type game. It hasn't been opened yet, but you can build stuff on it so far. Just raised $93 million again by SoftBank. So SoftBank really injecting a ton of cash into this space.
Yeah, they just raised a couple months ago $140 million. I don't know what the valuation is. This particular article doesn't say. It's got to be unicorn status already. Building on Ethereum, which is interesting. I know you've taken a look at the tech. You think it looks cool, but I think a lot of this comes off of the Facebook Meta pivot, right? Facebook, the biggest social media, fifth largest company. We're just looking at that in the world. Is now pivoting to the metaverse, and Sandbox has a sand token. What has that done on this news?
It's done some things.
Some big things.
Yeah, it's been hanging around like 75 cents. And then as soon as the Facebook Meta pivot, sand just went from 75 cents to like $3+. And then at the same time, it also raised, you know, $93 million. So good tailwinds for this Sandbox company.
Jeez, market cap close to $3 billion. And this is just a leg up. We've seen that ever since the Facebook announcement and a lot of like anything that is classified as the metaverse as a token, that's a narrative that is happening in DeFi tokens right now. Another narrative that doesn't get old is the narrative of
get a job.
Getting a job in crypto, of course. This is the time when we remind you that there are all sorts of fantastic job opportunities in crypto. All of these fantastic protocols and companies are hiring. We have a Bankless job board where we try to consolidate as much as possible some of the coolest opportunities. This week, head of growth at DexGuru, a technical lead at Daftly Incorporated, an accountant at Smart DeFi, product manager at Smart DeFi as well, head of Ethereum research at Immutable. David, you had Immutable on the podcast earlier this week. Also, head of tokens, community manager at Dexable, a lead engineer at Hats.finance, community manager at eAgronom. Did I get it right this week?
Yeah, nice job. Nice job.
That was like 4 weeks.
Also, I don't know if that's correct, but that's just how I do it.
Okay. That's how David has always said it. Also, they're looking for a CTO, eAgronom. Senior backend engineer, Smart DeFi, blockchain technical CTO, interim role at Merit, community manager at Argon, founding blockchain engineer at Highlight. Oh my God, I'm almost out of breath. Senior software engineer, Popcorn, and a community lead at Popcorn as well. I rattled off just the top ones that I could list, but there are dozens more on the job board. Sign up for that. And make sure you check this weekly for opportunities in crypto that could fit your skill set.
Yeah, as these raises have come in the last few weeks that we keep on talking about, raise after raise after raise, there's so many jobs available on the job board.
We just raised $700 million. We're digital currency group. I think we need to hire some people to spend that on. They got to be doing some of that, right? Where else is the money going with all of these raises? That's where it's going, folks. All right, David, let's get to the news. The big one of the week is the Facebook Metaverse pivot. They're changing, they're rebranding, no longer Facebook. They are now called Meta. That is the company name. That is the ticker symbol. That is the meta.com website. A social technology company is what they're saying in their press release. David, what's happening here?
I like this little graphic where they have like WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, all of their products, and then it forms into the M of the Meta. Basically, I think we talk about this a few times where like sometimes people start building stuff and they don't know explicitly what they're building towards until they actually get there. So I think the idea here is that Facebook has been building out parts of the metaverse in different little pieces. Like, you know, the Facebook was like the first virtual online social media thing that really took the world by storm. It was the first iteration of, you know, V1 metaverse. Add in Instagram, add in WhatsApp, add in all these social elements. Now with Oculus VR, I think this pivot makes a ton of sense, right? They are already making like virtual online experiences in different silos, and now they're just branding this under the single umbrella. Also doing a fantastic job of aligning their branding with the metaverse, which is getting a just absolutely ton of attention as a word, even though no one still knows what it actually is.
Oh, I feel like we know what it is.
Yeah, we do know what
it is. We have some hints.
We
have some direction there.
Yeah. But obviously, like, there's basically nothing that Facebook and Zuck can do that has positive light on it. Like, sure, you can call it the metaverse. I'm going to call it the Zuckverse. Like, it's the Zuckverse.
Well, deservedly so. I mean, they have it feels very much like use their command and control to abuse users in the past, maybe abuse even ecosystem participants. Yeah,
entire countries.
Yeah, it does feel like Facebook deserves a lot of the flack that they get. But Chris Dixon pointed out in our podcast, like, he is one of the only original big Web 2 founders that are still actively involved in making bets and managing their companies, right? It's just kind of Zuckerberg, I guess, Jack Dorsey and Zuckerberg, but like the Google founders, you know, they're gone. Microsoft, of course, like, they're gone. All of the original big tech companies are mostly gone. I guess Bezos is still there. I don't know why Dixon didn't include them, but it enables somebody like Zuck to make a big bet. And that's what this is. This is a big bet on the future. It's going to cost a lot of money for them to get here into the metaverse. And there was so many different takes on this, right? So like one take I felt like was the political take, right? Maybe political Twitter was very much like, oh yeah, this is just Zuck trying to deflect from his bad PR, right? Everyone hates the name Facebook, so now you're becoming Meta. Okay, you know, whatever. I think crypto Twitter, much of crypto Twitter saw this as a co-opting of crypto, a co-opting of the metaverse. Yeah, okay, you're trying to duplicate our thing, but just make it decentralized or centralized. Brian Armstrong's take was interesting, which he was very much like, you know, Zuck knows what he's doing. He's smart. He's founder-led. he actually believes that somewhat like I think I do, maybe you do too, David, that this is going to force Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook to build on top of crypto, right? Because like in the metaverse, where do you get your property rights layer? We can't have Meta, Facebook, be the property rights layer of this entire economy, this universe that we're building. So where does that come from? Well, it has to come from NFTs, tokens, settlement on systems like Ethereum. And so maybe this is actually just Zuckerberg kind of capitulating and being like, okay, I'll build my universe, right? I'll own the front end, but I'm going to build it on this open standard, which is crypto. And maybe that's a super bullish thing for crypto. What's your take on all of these things?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Occam's razor here. I don't think there's much of a crypto story here at all. I think this is just about, because there was a video I saw of the whole like presentation of the pivot and what they were going to do with it. And everything was cut out for it except for the words experiences. And so it's just Zuckerberg saying experiences, experiences, experiences over and over. The word experiences was built into this thing. I truly think it's more of Web 2 stuff, less about crypto, property rights, NFTs, stuff like that, and more just literally about like it's a big pivot into Oculus, into VR, into the online social experiences. And so maybe the crypto part does come, but I don't think that's the specific strategy that's being communicated here. I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, I think there's some truth to what you said. I just think the reason it's bullish crypto is because I think many people in Silicon Valley. No, it's like it's more than that. So many people in Silicon Valley, if you ask them what their, we have a different definition of the metaverse than them. Okay, right. If you ask them what their definition of the metaverse is, it's experience. It's augmented reality. It's virtual reality. It's this new realm that you can go to. Okay. The crypto definition of the metaverse is strong property rights. It's self-sovereignty. It's like the difference between New York City, a neighborhood where you can own private property and set up commercial shops and business, and Disneyland, which is an experience. And where are you actually going to set? Yeah, it's manicured. Where are you actually going to create a real organic digital universe? Mm-hmm. It's not in Disneyland. You don't build a house and raise your kids in Disneyland, okay? Right. And that if the metaverse is going to be a human experience, if it's going to be a real organic thing, then it has to have property rights. It has to feel real. It has to like live. So that's why I'm kind of the mind that, yeah, Zuck thinks it's about experience maybe because that's the only hammer in their tool belt. But what this really is about is like they can build the front end on top of this thing. I don't care. They'll be forced to settle on top of crypto money systems and crypto property rights systems. So that's why I am, I guess, bullish. And I do think that there is a crypto story here underlying, even though they don't see it yet.
Sure. Yeah, I do like that take. You said that they think it's all about experiences and we think it's all about property rights. And I will say, when you have property rights, you also have the culture come out of the property rights.
Yes.
Like CryptoPunks, Bored Apes, like property rights about those things. And that is also experiences. And those experiences are vibes that I've been feeling all week here at NFT NYC. And you're not going to be able to – that's a bottom-up vibe, not a top-down experience. And so that is the difference.
It's totally right. And it's like back to what we were talking about. It's like let's make the internet weird again. The internet is like boring and sterile and not weird. Let's make it weird again. I think that's what crypto is doing. Nike's getting
there's
in
no
on
risk
it too,
in Disneyland, but there's a bunch of risk in NFTs. And
there's no risk in Disneyland. You can't get kidnapped at Disneyland, huh? It is locked down, very secure, very safe. Nike is heading to the metaverse as well. They are filing trademarks in the metaverse, and they are hiring metaverse designers. So here's an interesting thought for you. Okay, it's like all of the growth for the mega brands, particularly the premium luxury brands, is going to be growth in the digital product space rather than the physical product space over the next 10 years. Remember when we had Kathy Wood on, we were like, well, like for the banks, you know, they could start doing more in crypto, but it would just be such a marginal small part of their business because they're so large. And she was like, oh, that's where you're wrong. Chris Berninski said this too, because it's not about the proportion of total revenue. It's about the proportion of future growth. All right. So all of the other business lines could be stagnant And if you have 90% of the growth on the digital side, on the crypto side, then the banks are going to start taking notice and capitulating. I feel like that's going to happen with brands too. It's like Nike, you've got all this IP, you got all this fan base, this brand equity, all these athletes. How are you actually going to grow your revenue over the next decade? And the massive amount of growth is going to come from digital products rather than physical products. So they're going to start piling in, David. That's what I see here.
Yeah, and the whole Facebook pivoting to Meta, I think there's a lot of companies behind the scenes doing virtual goods, metaverse type things. And this is just, again, going to turn this into an absolute rat race of who can be the most metaverse the fastest.
These are awesome shoes, by the way. What are these?
Like virtual Nikes.
God, they look awesome.
I don't get it.
I want these.
What?
In my life.
Wear Nikes.
How do you know that? Have you ever seen my shoes?
I have never seen your shoes.
You even see the bottom half of me.
Rarely? It's weird when I do.
I'll show you my shoes sometime. I do have a pair of Nikes. Not that cool though. Yeah, I said this take, but that's the take. The virtual goods are going to dwarf the physical goods before long. Microsoft getting in on the action too. Microsoft CEO, it's the biggest company in the world, apparently. The metaverse will bring the real world into any digital space. So they are going all in. They plan to introduce 90 new services and updates in three major areas, including the metaverse. You can absolutely expect us to do things in gaming. Of course, they said no surprise there. They own the Xbox. So are they just going to fast follow Facebook into this thing, David?
Yeah, everyone. Everyone's going to the metaverse. We're all going to see you there.
See you in the metaverse. What's Reddit doing, David? This is super exciting. This is an engineer who just joined their team. Going to the metaverse. Three words. He says decentralize, period, social, period, media. What does this mean?
This is huge. Okay, I think Reddit is on the cusp of perhaps one of the biggest pivots of all time. From a Web 2 company to a Web 3 company, not just a little bit, but going heads first. So we know that Reddit has always been curious with Ethereum. They had the Reddit scaling bake-off competition forever ago. Arbitrum won it. And so Reddit is now using Arbitrum to scale out NFTs and tokens inside of the Reddit platform. And so the writer of this thread has the ultrasound money icons in his handle. Just want to throw that out there.
Oh my God, just noticed.
And so he makes a fantastic thread. So let's go through it. Your karma points will soon be tokens. Think community-based decisions, forking subreddits in disagreements, which is, oh my God, that's so cool. That's so amazingly cool. First off, like
Dow.
Incentivizing good content via valid contributions, that's amazing.
Yep.
But also a very dark part about Bitcoin's history and crypto's history at large is that the Bitcoin had a civil war inside of the rBitcoin subreddit, and they forked it off into rBTC and rBitcoin because there was this, I can't remember his name, but a mod subreddit that was like silencing anyone that wanted big blocks and only for small blocks. And there was a massive, massive civil war that ultimately created the block size wars, the fork wars, right? And it was just a conspiracy and espionage. It was crazy back then. Some of the stories, Griff Green told me some of these stories in the Layer Zero. And like, if we can just figure out how, like, in like how we fork our blockchain, we can just fork our subreddits, like with more like instantiated assets inside of them that go and have governance votes and allow the communities to have voice. That is amazing, and that's exactly what DAOs do when tokens do. And so I think the what this could become is one of the coolest things of all time. The thread continues. Reddit has 500 million monthly active users. When we all pull this off, we will onboard 500 million. Web 2 users into Web 3, and then there is no going back. We are all going to make it. And then he just continues saying crypto culture things. It's time to take back control, make the internet truly open and break free, give us each ownership of everything. And so I think this could be one of the most groundbreaking pivots of all time.
Yeah, I do too, David. I'm super bullish on this. Like we said in the last episode, Reddit actually has, they don't monetize their user base very well, right? And
right.
Maybe that's because they don't really prey on their user base the way other social media platforms kind of do through advertising, through like mining them for all of this information. It's a bit more open, a bit more free, but as a result, it's not as profitable. Well, this gives them incentive to jump into Web3 first, because they don't have to cannibalize a large existing business model. Right. There's just opportunity. They don't have much to lose. There's just opportunity on the other side. And the thing is, the technology is here too. So this thread goes on to say, Reddit has partnered with Arbitrum, which you mentioned, created our own separate instance of Arbitrum. Community points for two subreddits. 80,000 users are already on RinkBee testnet and our Arbitrum network. So remember Arbitrum when we had them on? They have Arbitrum 1, which they're rolling out, which is live right now. But Arbitrum doesn't have to be just one rollup, okay? You can use the Arbitrum code and create your own rollup. And that's what Reddit is doing here. They're just forking. They're creating a separate instance of a rollup that all settles on top of Ethereum. So super exciting to see an engineer talk about the technology being ready for this too. Overall, this is just ultra bullish Web2 companies becoming Web3 companies. They have everything to gain. As Chris Dixon said, Web3 is ownership. He actually quotes him in this thread. And I mean, man, Web2 is
just great.
Web2's peaked, man. I really feel like that.
Absolutely.
This is this the Wall Street, New York Times? New York Times says they are hiring a crypto and fintech reporter. Must be able to explain what Web3 is. Apply here. New York Times.
Look at that.
Getting in on the action too.
Also going Web3. Everyone's going Web3. Everyone's going to the metaverse. We're all going there.
They want to talk about it anyway. So super cool stuff to see. David, let's talk about some NFT action. You saw some
Lots of NFT action this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's this Quentin Tarantino thing?
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino, 7 uncut scenes from Pulp Fiction released as NFTs. So he was at NFT NYC on a panel with some of our fellow like community members, a coin artist, G Money, Quentin Tarantino, all sitting in chairs together talking about NFTs. That's a big name getting into NFTs. So NFTs, like, got another one.
Yeah, got another one. What's your favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, by the way? Do you watch any?
Oof. Oh, I was not prepared for that question. Can I defer to next week?
Yeah. Go watch a few and we'll talk about it next week. Go watch Inglourious Bastards, Django Unchained.
Inglourious Bastards is a good one.
That's a good one, yeah.
Oh, no, it's Django Unchained.
Mine. Final answer. That's mine, final dude. Answer. Yeah, final totally. Answer. It's easy for me. I love that movie. All right, let's talk about the McRib, David. McRib is issuing an NFT, okay? Top Signal? Global adoption, maybe? New paradigm.
It's top signals all the way down. it's just like a rotating like trading card, but it's a McRib. McRib has this like cult following. McDonald's. It's a pretty big deal that McDonald's is releasing an NFT of a McRib. Just legitimizing the technology. Like, hey, someone's gonna buy it.
Have you ever eaten a McRib?
I've never eaten a McRib.
Do you know what it's made out of? Because I don't.
I've heard it's made out of a bunch of BS that I don't want to know.
So it's not an actual rib.
It's like fake filler.
And like the ripples in it are not actual, like it's not an actual rib, right? Like it's just a synthesized rib.
Fake rib.
Fake rib. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll probably enjoy it more in NFT.
Real NFT though.
Real NFT. That's great. All right. Well, I don't know if we peaked or not, but McRib is on the blockchain. So that's great. How about the Matrix, dude? Let's skip to that. We'll get back to this. So the Matrix, the new movie coming out, they are actually issuing NFTs as well, right? PFP NFTs?
Profile picture NFTs. 100,000 of them, which is crazy.
On a sidechain, right?
On a sidechain, yeah. On a Ethereum-linked sidechain. Not a roll-up, just a sidechain. It's called Palm. But yeah, 100,000 profile pictures for the Matrix avatar. Is this the new style of marketing? It's like, it's like, oh, our movie's coming out. Let's try and get everyone to wear our avatars as the movie gets released for people get hyped about it. Right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
And the numbers here, you pointed out, David, 100,000, that's big for crypto, right? Because usually these PFPs are like 10,000 or something is pretty common. Mm-hmm. But like, that's pretty small for all of the moviegoers who see The Matrix, right? What are their box
office
sales?
Millions and millions of people that go and will see it opening weekend.
It's pretty small. And it's very easy for them to release this digital NFT merchandise. I wouldn't be surprised in the future, David, this is successful. Every single release, we're certainly seeing, last week we talked about Disney getting on it. Every single movie release, you're going to see NFT digital merchandise that you can purchase on top of this too.
Here's like a possibility that I could see happening. You know how Twitter is integrating verifiable NFTs?
Yeah.
Well, what if you get an airdrop for verifying your Matrix NFT and having it on your profile picture for like 2 weeks, because they want you to do that to market the movie. And if you do that and like market the movie, then you get an airdrop after the fact. Like, imagine those games that could be played.
I mean, marketers are going to come up with basically every right. sort of iteration of what you're talking about, David. Yeah, I could totally see that playing out. What's interesting too is in China, the tech giants are saying yes on NFTs, but no on cryptocurrencies, right? We sort of seen this in the US where Web2 companies right. are like, we're not going to do crypto payments. That's a little scary. But NFTs, oh yeah, easy. Let's add some features, you know, right. TikTok, Twitter, all of these things. We're seeing that in China also, play out too.
Think about this from a regulatory perspective. Like, it's the same thing. Like, no, get the currencies out of here.
Exactly.
But NFTs, like, sure, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
sure. You know, we're not JPEGs. Threatened by that. We're not threatened
I don't care
about
JPEGs.
By your Axie.
It's a Trojan horse.
Oh my God. That's what I was about to say.
It's the biggest
say,
Trojan
David.
Horse.
It's the biggest because without cryptocurrencies, NFTs actually don't work.
Yep.
Like, did you know NFTs are actually secured by the cryptocurrencies on the chain? Right? Like, that is the security mechanism, the value of cryptocurrency. That is a security mechanism for NFTs. And if they're not secured by a cryptocurrency, then they're not NFTs. They're just entries in a centralized database.
Right.
So tricked you. We tricked you guys. You are, by adopting NFTs, you are adopting cryptocurrencies, maybe without knowing it. So thank you very much.
The NFT rug pull. Oh, love it.
Let's talk about this. Was this a rug pull or what? There was some CryptoPunk that sold for $500
million
as the Bloomberg article.
$500 million. For FYI, I think the biggest CryptoPunk sale ever was something like $7 or $8 million, something, you know, very, very high, but not $500 million. So what the hell happened? Turns out this guy wrote a smart contract, guy or girl, unknown person, wrote a smart contract that when the smart contract would receive the ether, it would immediately send it back. And so what happens is this guy put his CryptoPunk into a smart contract, borrowed a flash loan from Aave, just borrowed all money possible. And a flash loan lets you borrow all the money that's in the vault, so long as you also return it in the same transaction, which is why you actually don't have to put up any collateral to do a flash loan. So this person just borrowed $532 million to buy a CryptoPunk. Once in that same block the CryptoPunk was bought, the contract returned all the money. So this person basically bought their own CryptoPunk for themselves. It wasn't a sale.
Wash trade kind of thing.
It's a wash trade, right? But they did set like the all-time high sale of a CryptoPunk ever. And so what happened was that the CryptoPunk bot that goes out, the notifications that a CryptoPunk was sold, one bot goes out and says, somebody bought a CryptoPunk for $532 million. Everyone started freaking out. It's not even that cool of a CryptoPunk. What the hell's going on? And then they realized that this guy just made like a circular loop and it caused a bunch of storm. But yeah, it's good meme, good joke, good riff. Now we're all talking about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. We're all talking about it, and we're all getting educated on flash loans because this one person, I don't know who this is, Ryan Patrick Curlin, he says, who the hell gives out $532 million loan to an individual, even for an instant? Who does that? And then Scott Lewis is like, the Ethereum virtual machine does that. It's magic. That's how we do it. And so what just happened?
We do it with code.
Yeah, this guy wash traded. It wasn't a real sale, right? Mm-hmm. But like, these numbers, the amount of money that we're talking about gets headlines. And then those headlines further propel this conversation and mainstream to start learning what flash loans are, what Ethereum is, what NFTs actually are, and what this transaction was really about. So kind of cool, kind of genius, I guess, from a PR perspective.
Ryan, since you're the tax optimizer between the two of us, is this a taxable event?
Oh my God! I don't even. Oh, now you just ruined the rest of the episode. I'm gonna be thinking about this the whole time.
In taxes.
No, I mean, if you're moving from one wallet that you own to another wallet you own, it's not a taxable event. There you go. Tax optimizer answer for the week.
Thank you, sir.
No taxable event, David. You can do that. It's fine. Check with your CPA. No, this was financial advice. Tax advice. Bitcoin stuff. Man, quarterbacks sure do love getting their payment in Bitcoin. So this is NFL star Aaron Rodgers. He is of the Green Bay Packers. He is getting some of his salary in Bitcoin. What's going on?
Yep. It's not the first time that that's happened. Some NBA players have also done this. Some people just want to be paid in Bitcoin. And I've... And players, like, they have a lot of money, right? And so they like to play in the money games too. They play in the markets, but, and they like crypto markets.
Just
right?
saves you a step, I guess. Rather than buying Bitcoin, yeah. you get paid in Bitcoin. Yeah. You don't have to do that step.
Good marketing.
You still have
Good
to pay
marketing.
Your taxes in fiat, unfortunately. But you know.
That's true.
Yeah. yeah. They won't be changing that anytime soon. Coinbase.
Maybe that's why they want to be paid in Bitcoin, so they can just like get it immediately. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I see that. You know, I guess I'd rather be paid in crypto in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. Coinbase is doing Bitcoin loans now. So the SEC shut down Coinbase Lend, right? Mm-hmm. Well, threatened them, and Coinbase decided to withdraw.
Said okay.
But mm-hmm. Coinbase Borrow? Yeah, that's what this mm-hmm. is. That's okay. So what is this product, Dave, and what's it doing?
Yeah, well, famously, you can't do DeFi on Bitcoin. That's not what Bitcoin's for. You can take your Bitcoin onto Ethereum and then do the DeFi stuff there. Or now you can also take your Bitcoin to Coinbase and get your loans, your Bitcoin collateralized loans from Coinbase. And this is kind of how we've always said Bitcoin is going to like scale out as a currency. It's going to use crypto banks. And that's what's going on here. So $1 million loans from Coinbase on your Bitcoin collateral.
Yeah, that's cool. It's interesting that they can borrow, but they can't lend, according to the SEC regulations.
It's completely nonsensical.
One half of BlockFi. But we talked about that with Brian Armstrong, too. You can listen to that on Monday. Mm-hmm. What is the Biden administration doing next? They might be putting stablecoins under federal supervision. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that to Congress, Biden administration says, we will mm-hmm. do that. What's your take on this message coming from?
Yeah, to me, this was relatively sensical regulation. What I got from this is that the stablecoin issuers need to be regulated as banks. That makes sense. The other thing that's also really nice about this is that Biden is saying, hey, Congress, hey, legislators, the people that were elected, please do legislation, which I like way more than the SEC, which I did not elect to impose regulation.
What about this or we will part, though, David?
Yeah, or I think it's by like or executive order, which like
but, they might anyway.
But also it's Congress, so like don't hold your breath. Like Congress doesn't go very fast.
Yeah, it doesn't go fast at all, especially these days. Jake Travinsky, I think, had his take here. He's a great crypto lawyer. Somebody he's been on Bankless many times. There's lots to pick apart in the new stablecoin report. This is a report that was put out, I believe, by Treasury, I think, that's kind of related to mm-hmm. that headline that we just read. But the TLDR of this is basically Congress has to act in order to enact the new legislation, right? And so I think what the Treasury is saying is basically like, hey, we'd like to do some things, but we really can't unless Congress acts. And Jake's point is like prompt action from this Congress on anything is unlikely, let alone on something like stablecoins. Like it's just not that big of a deal on the congressional agenda. They can't get any of the main initiatives passed that the Congress wants to get passed. So are they going to do anything with stablecoins? No. So this is kind of a sigh of relief for people in the industry who are worried about some harsh action being taken against stablecoins that might be a bit, we talked to Brian Quintez, he talked about like, Congress is either doing like not enough or like way too much. And so you got to mm-hmm. watch that pendulum swing. And that was the worry that suddenly they would get draconian on stablecoins and do way too much. It doesn't look like that is likely, at least at this point, according to Jake.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, very cool. David, let's talk about what China's doing. China is continuing to roll out its central bank digital currency. Did you know 10% of China's population now has a digital yuan wallet?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Big moves. I
mean, that's way more like there's not 10% of people inside the United States play with crypto? How much do you think people play with crypto inside the United States?
Well, Coinbase has 65 million customers. I guess some of that's worldwide. So yeah, 10 to 15%. Let's call it that.
Okay. Well, anyways, no one's touching the United States central bank digital currency. So if the United States would like to latch on to the success of DeFi, they could actually beat China in this. But not holding my breath there either.
Yeah, they really should. I put out this tweet. Meanwhile, in the U.S., back to our favorite screenshot here, the congressional hearing, cryptocurrencies, what are they good for? That's what the U.S. is still debating while China is like rolling out a central bank digital currency. All right, guys, we are going to be right back with the takes of the week. But before we do, we want to thank the fantastic sponsors who made this episode possible.
The era of proof of stake is upon us. Proof-of-stake systems like Ethereum, Terra, and Solana allow the industry to move away from the hot, loud, and wasteful proof-of-work systems and return back to a cottage industry of individual stakers and individual validators. And that is what we need to make this industry stay decentralized. Individuals must play their part in crypto network validation. And that is what Lido is here to do. Lido makes staking accessible to everyone at the click of a button. By delegating your stake to Lido's network of nodes, you can access the yield offered by proof-of-stake systems and claim your share of the network transaction rewards. Do you have 32 ETH and want to stake it to Ethereum, but running a node sounds intimidating? Or maybe you have less than 32 ETH and you need to pool your ETH with others so you can access staking yields. Lido offers a solution for both. Simply go to Lido.fi, choose which assets you want to stake, and deposit them to the Lido validating network. Lido is working to make sure proof of stake stays as decentralized as possible, and is committed to decentralizing its own validating network to eventually become a completely permissionless protocol. So if you want to stake your ETH, Terra, or Sol and get liquidity on your stake, go to Lido.fi to get started. The Aave protocol is a decentralized liquidity protocol on Ethereum, which allows users to supply and borrow certain crypto assets. Aave version 2 has a ton of cool features that makes using the Aave protocol even more powerful. With Aave, you can leverage the full power of DeFi Money Legos, yield, and composability all in one application. On Aave, there are a ton of assets that you can supply to the protocol in order to gain yield, and all of those same assets can also be borrowed from the protocol if you have supplied collateral. Here you can see me borrowing 200 USDC against my portfolio of a number of different DeFi tokens and ETH. I'll choose a variable interest rate because it's a lower rate than the stable interest rate option, but I could choose the stable interest rate option if I wanted to lock in that interest rate in permanently. V2 also features the ability for users to swap collateral without having to withdraw their assets, trade them on Uniswap, and then deposit them back into Aave. With Aave, users can do this in one seamless transaction, saving you time and gas costs. Check out the power of Aave at aave.com. That's Aave.com.
All right, guys, welcome back. We are here with the takes of the week. We search the Twitter sphere. We search for all of the great takes that are happening in crypto this week. We try to dish them out to you. This is the first one. David, you want to read this out from Zeneca once again? It made it last week, making it this week too. What's this take?
Yeah, Zenkar says, on the calendar year of NFTs, we are still having breakfast on January 1st. What he means is, like, if you take all of NFT lifetime, like the whole entire progress and development and the stories of NFTs, we are just eating breakfast on the very first day. Basically, he's saying NFTs have a long, long road runway ahead of them.
Have you ever seen, like, you know what that reminds me of? It's like the lifespan of humanity. And if you like project like the entire history of the universe, and make that a calendar year, then how long would humans be alive for? It's something like some sort of picosecond.
It's like nothing. Right?
So it's nothing. Yeah, we're very early. Not quite there, but maybe we're just still on day one of NFTs. David, what's this take from Eric Wall?
Yeah, Eric Wall says, making a high throughput L1 to reduce gas costs is a bit like making a road wider to reduce traffic. In reality, the wider road makes people think, oh, I can take my car to work now instead of commuting. And then, boom, traffic reclogs. It takes exactly as long as you took to get to work as it did before. And he is, quote, retweeting Kyle Samani when somebody was asking, hey, can like Solana do rollups too? And yeah, sure, of course Solana can do rollups. But the point is, like, if you can do rollups, why do you scale the L1, right? And so it's just what Eric's saying, he made a great thread about this, is that it doesn't make any sense to both scale the L1 and the L2 because you're putting an L2, which is really, really, really scalable, on top of an L1, which is also scalable but also not decentralized. And so what he's saying is, like, Kyle Samani is saying, like, oh yeah, Solana will eventually have to go to rollups because it'll eventually congest. Kyle said that, which goes against the whole entire point of why Solana exists in the first place, and is just being like, hey, we can just like use penetrative pricing, cheap gas fees to undermine Ethereum, and then we're going to be the thing that goes to rollups because we totally know that we're going to be congested
in the future. That's a total pivot, by the way. That's a total pivot the entire purpose of chains like Solana, monolithic chain design, was high throughput on layer one so that you wouldn't need rollups. Why?
Right.
Because the advocates of Solana would argue in rollups, you lose composability. right? You lose this kind of atomic DeFi to DeFi sort of transaction ability. And so you need massive amounts of throughput on the monolithic chain on the layer one. And this is a pivot from that, a departure, a change, a 360, a, I don't know, or, sorry, 180. Like what else is this? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me either. And Eric Wall is, I think, rightly calling it out. I think there is a path, as we said before, for the Solanas of the world to get, you know, to move into the roll-up design. And it's like twofold. Either you become a roll-up on top of some other highly economic consensus layer, like an Ethereum or something else, right? So you become the execution layer, or you move to become more decentralized over time, right? And like you become a bit more Ethereum-like, and you prioritize, rather than scalability on layer one, you prioritize decentralization a bit more and security, right? And then in which case you're just kind of following Ethereum toward the path that it's taking. So this is what we've been saying, right? With the ultrasound, Ethereum ultrasound network, modular blockchain kind of thesis that we've been putting out there, and others like Polly and I have been putting out there too.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Well, let's talk about this. I read a letter earlier this week because Metaverse was all the rage, right? You know, Zuck and Facebook moving to the Metaverse. What does this mean? And this is like an investor letter that said, oh, hey, if you're an investor and you want to play the Metaverse, the thing you should do is go buy Facebook and go buy Roblox. All right. It's so crazy to me that people still think that the Metaverse will emerge from this old world, that it will emerge from, like, one, old capital formation tools like stocks, and like two, old Web 2 companies that don't really get it. It's like, folks, the best way to play the Metaverse is to buy ETH, okay? Yep. It's to buy the property rights layer of the Metaverse, okay? Right. So if you believe the thesis that we believe, which is this entire Metaverse thing has to be backed by strong settlement guarantees, strong property rights, like actual digital scarcity that's open, incredibly neutral, you're buying things like ETH, you're buying things like, you know, Bitcoin, you're buying the banking layer of this new economy, which is DeFi, like you're buying Web3 type things, you're buying crypto money things. You're not buying Facebook and Roblox. My God. I mean, you could buy those things. They're not terrible. It's just like, why would you allocate capital to those old things when you have this new thing? That's how I see it anyway. And so it was just a connection. Is people think, oh, the Metaverse is hot, and they really don't know what to buy or what to invest in the space. And I think once again, the answer is really it's crypto.
Yeah, 100%. And we don't talk about it. We haven't talked about this angle a lot lately, but Ether is one of the most fantastic indexes of what Ethereum is. And if you read our Metaverse Emerges article or our Metaverse podcast, everything, when the Metaverse is built as a property rights layer, everything ultimately converges on Ether. And and you finished this up with exactly what I was about to say. ETH is Metaverse money. That's the whole thing.
Yep, absolutely. That is the whole thing. And I don't think traditional investors and traditional media get it yet. So that is an opportunity to front run. Yeah. Of course, we're still the ability to front run the Metaverse now. David, do this take. It's really good from Twitter.
Yeah, this is funny. The first company to call it a profile instead of a wallet will win. If you still think it's a wallet, you don't understand its capabilities. This is just lending itself to, like, you know, your Ethereum address is more than just, like, you know, the place that you store your money. It's your Metaverse identity. It is your Web3 identity layer for the world. My davidhoffman.eth connects to my specific Ethereum address, and that is, you've called this before, my passport into the digital nation, into the Metaverse. So it's not, these aren't wallets. These are profiles.
I love these small little paradigm shifts like that, right? Like wallet is a really good mental model, but also profile, self-sovereign identity is a really good mental model. And I think that is starting to emerge in crypto as well. Hey, these things aren't just places where you can store assets. These can actually be like the ability to log in with an ETH address is a real thing. Really cool to see the decentralized identity narrative, you know, taking form some more. David, this is your take. Why don't you say it?
Yeah, Facebook's Metaverse is Encyclopedia Britannica. Ethereum's metaverse is Wikipedia. And this is just basically saying, hey, Facebook is going to build their own metaverse, their own Disneyland, and they're going to invite you into it. Ethereum's metaverse is everyone's going to contribute and put their pieces of the metaverse into this larger and growing and open and free larger metaverse, right? And so this is just a fundamental analogy that we always use in the free and open source software world. Like, why did Wikipedia win? Well, it allowed anyone to write for it.
Yeah, I think it's the difference between like the United States versus Disneyland, right? It's like you couldn't fit the United States inside of Disneyland, could you?
Yeah.
But like Disneyland has to rest on something like the United States, right? So it's like Facebook's metaverse really is going to be an app on top of this larger metaverse that we think
it'll
of.
Be the Disneyland version of the metaverse.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it'll still be there and people can go there. People can visit. They're just
In the metaverse.
Yeah.
It'll just be in our metaverse and it'll be the metaverse inside of the metaverse, the Disneyland metaverse.
Yeah. I don't think it's just not that complicated. It's just like Facebook is an app on the internet. It is not the internet, right? It's just that. Here's a scary thought. I was thinking about this earlier this week. As bullish as I am, Devin, you know I'm bullish, right? And you know I don't think the bear market is coming anytime soon. I think we've still got a run in us. But it is a scary thought to me sometimes when I see all of these token thoughts. Probably close to 50% of people right now have never seen a bear market. Okay. They don't even know what that looks like. Their only experience with crypto is, oh, I buy the thing and the number goes up. Oh, and it doesn't really matter what I buy because anything I buy, the number goes up, right? And like, oh. Wait,
JPEGs go up?
Oh, yeah, okay. Everything goes up, all right? And some things just go up faster than other things. And so what do I want to do? I want to get in the assets and tokens that go up the fastest, right? These are like little babies in crypto. Like, and I don't mean that in a condescending way. They're so new. They're like newborn babies and they've never seen the real shit. Okay. Mm-hmm. They haven't really, like, until you've been through a bear market and like everything gets tested, your conviction gets tested, all of your theses get tested, and you've seen kind of the recovery of that, the other side, you don't really know what you own. So many people, like your friends and family, people you like go to Thanksgiving with, many of them will probably own some crypto, but very few of them probably know what they own or why they own it, right? So this is actually a little scary to me, a little concerning, because, bear markets can come. And then what happens when people don't have conviction in the things that they bought and they start to see a 20%, 30% decline, they're going to head for the exits. So
and then it's going to make it worse, right?
It's going to make it worse.
Into a feedback loop. Yeah.
I mean, that just struck me. I guess like at some point in time, you get a certain amount of people who buy in and they don't really know why they bought in. And then it kind of like there's a tipping point reached where like something bad could happen, right? I guess that's what speculative bubbles are at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, one of the guts that I try and listen to is like the euphoria pain spectrum. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, it's been a while since I felt any pain. I've been feeling a lot of euphoria lately. Like that usually means that pain's like around the corner.
Yeah.
Like you don't get to be in markets and don't feel like both. Like you get equal amounts of pain and equal amounts of euphoria. And there's been a lot of euphoria lately. And as you can definitely tell that in like how many strangers there are at this NFT NYC event. Like a lot of these people are just here for the first time and like they've been coming in when the times are good. There are very few people that have felt pain. And so a lot
does
of people
this worry
in this
industry, you, sir? Are you worried right now? Are we getting a little long in the tooth in this run?
The thing is, like, I always leave room for a new paradigm. And so, like, I think, like, all of the pain that the collective crypto community felt during 2018, 2019, like, it's that the meme of the army man protecting the sleeping child from the knives and the swords and the grenades and stuff. Like,
yeah.
I think maybe there's a world where we took that pain and like, you know, shielded the 2020, the 2021ers from having to worry about that because we built all the infrastructure in the bear market.
I think the other thing is once you go through a bear market, right? Like you're not worried about that. You don't worry about the next one anymore. It's like, what's the worst that could happen? right?
Oh, I was making so many jokes this week about like, oh yeah, all the crypto people that I met in 2019, 2018, like a lot of us are like, gosh, the bear market was nice. Like it was quiet back then. Like it was quiet, really
good time to make friends, good time to start things, good time to build, right? And like, if you didn't leave in 2018, 2019, are you going to leave in the great bear market of 2024?
No, it'll still be a bull market to us.
Exactly. Anyway, I just, you know, it's something I'm thinking about. And again, I don't think this is imminent personally, but you never know. Yeah. And markets can certainly turn in a hurry, at least in the short run. David, this is a means take, and it's actually a riff on the Reddit thread that we were tugging on from that engineer who just recently joined Reddit. What does he mean say here?
Mean says, the end users of Ethereum are no longer individual humans. It's roll-up dev teams building ecosystems. Let 1,000 roll-ups bloom. Ethereum as a civilizational trust anchor. And Ethereum is specifically talking about the Ethereum L1. He's saying the end users of the Ethereum L1 are no longer individual humans. And Amin Soleimani is one of those guys that memed Moloch into existence. And this angle of Ethereum as a civilizational trust anchor is so great. And so Reddit, when it uses Arbitrum to scale all of its stuff, the entire universe of Reddit comes and settles on Ethereum. And that is why Ethereum is a civilizational trust anchor, because it's not just Reddit. It's going to be everything is on a roll-up, settled by Ethereum, secured by Ethereum, allowing coordination to happen. So great take.
Yeah, I really like that take. And also let 1,000 roll-ups bloom, right? Any like a roll-up can be whatever you want it to be. And this is Reddit, you know, creating its own roll-up. Super cool. I have actually a question for you, David. This is just something I've been thinking about recently. So let's assume, as we are, that the main chain is completely occupied by rollups in the future, right? So like large pools of capital that are settling on Ethereum. That means gas fees are not going down on Ethereum mainnet anytime soon. Transaction fees on rollups will go down in the future, but gas fees on mainnet will not. Does this mean there could be a lot of NFTs like stranded on Ethereum in the future, right? Like, and I say like tokens too, but NFTs specifically, because some of these are pretty, like some of them can be very low value and they cost more to trade. Has there been any talk NFT NYC, that sort of thing?
No, I haven't. I haven't thought about that, but that is a good point. I do believe that L1 gas fees are up only, and so like, damn, like NFTs might, a lot of cool stuff might get stranded on the L1 simply because it's just not viable to get it off there.
Something I'm going to think about some more, but anyway.
Also, when Amin Soleimani says "let 1,000 rollups bloom," that should be in stark contrast to what Kyle Soleimani was talking about, and with when Eric Wall retweeted him and talking about like, oh yeah, if you add more lanes to a road, the road just gets congested. The way you add more lanes is you add more rollups because they're separate roads.
More roads?
Anyways.
More roads rather than one super big road?
Make more roads on the L2. That's what the L2s do. That's where the extra roads go.
Roads and bridges and all sorts of things. This is Scott Lewis' take. Ethereum isn't going to be a consumer-facing blockchain for all that much longer. That's what he means on the main chain, right? Specifically. So I was asking that question about NFTs on main chain.
And it's always been... It's always been Ethereum's plan to be in the background. It's not supposed to be in your face. It's supposed to be invisible, just like TCP/IP. And if Ethereum hides behind these rollups, that's perfect. That's where it's supposed to be.
Yeah. You don't even know. Like, it's DYDX. I mean, this exists in practice. You don't even know you're using Ethereum. David, you did this take. This is from NFT NYC again.
Yeah, somebody tweets out, the pro of being a woman at an NFT event is that there are no bathroom lines ever. And so Mike Dudas, who I actually met this week, great to meet you, Mike. He goes, crypto, bringing equality to bathroom line waits. I experienced this for myself. I had to wait behind like 7 other dudes to go to the bathroom while like the ladies' room had no one in there.
That's funny. Maybe another push for just like unisex gender neutral bathrooms, right? It's like just even things out anyway. Okay. David, before we get to what you're excited about, actually, we're about to get to what you're excited about. So let me just ask you, what are you excited about this week? Yeah, tell me.
Well, I've teased it throughout all of this roll-up, but NFT NYC was great. I met Cami Russo there, met her in person, so I thought that was funny. It's nice in crypto where, like, you know, Defiant, Bankless, like, we're not the same, we're not different, but yeah, some friendly competition there. Like, she's got a great newsletter, we've got a great newsletter, she's got a great podcast, we've got a great podcast. But in crypto, like, it's all love. So got to meet Cami Russo, that was fantastic. Like I said, met Brian Armstrong, shout out to the Pleaser DAO family, which we call ourselves a DAO, but we're really a family, even though I'm like the least active member of the DAO. but like, you know, hanging out, listening to the Wu-Tang album, it's like I keep on chilling in real life events. Maybe Ryan will come to one.
Maybe one day. Definitely next year. But, okay.
Mm-hmm. the culture and vibes are really, really great. And again, if you got to find your clan, you got to find your community,
find your people.
The first ever crypto event I ever went to was ETH Denver 2018. I met two people there from the Brave team, Luke and Jenny. I saw Jenny for the first time in 4 years this year here in New York. So that was pretty cool. The crypto world, the longer you're here, the more it feels like family. And so
it's really cool too. A bunch of people shared values as well. And I'm glad Cami probably recognized you, unlike Brian Armstrong, right? But I see your AIM username, AOL username there, Blackjack Davy. So
Blackjack
I understand.
Davey,
like, yeah, it's a totally different persona.
Shout out to Jack White and the Blackjack Davy song that I named myself after.
That's awesome, man.
Ryan, I think I just got a tease about what you're excited about.
I'm
so
flipping
tell me
tabs
about it
too quickly, but you know this, okay? Bankless DAO, the DAO Punk kind of project that spun out of Bankless DAO, had an NFT drop, and that happened last Friday. It was awesome, dude. It was just really fun. I mean, I'm into turtles, okay? Like, but I haven't jumped 2 feet into the whole NFT game. So this was the first time I got to experience a whole NFT minting from the ground up. And what was cool about this was like, this really started with the community first. So there was a culture and community for DAO punks. And in what is that culture in the community? It's like a bunch of people who want to say, F the 9-to-5, right? Like we want to self-organize in these new capital structures and social structures and work for DAOs full-time, right? This is about going bankless, which of course we are fully into bankless culture and saying like no to the establishment. This is about going west. And so a lot of this culture and these values were really imbued in these DAO punks. So I minted some NFTs and then I purchased a few NFTs like on the secondary market. And again, I don't do this a lot, so it's just really fun, man. And I love the NFTs. All of these are going to be actual physical merchandise too. So this is a bridge of the real world. And what I saw in the community was, you know, not a lot of shilling, not a lot of like, what's the floor price checking, not a lot of like, it was just a very long-term kind of thinking, new vibe, new culture, right?
Very sustainable culture.
Sustainable culture. And you talked a lot about like, what's a DAO? It's all about like flow. It's all about like the vibes of the DAO. And I think I felt that in a cool way. And, you know, tying that to NFTs is cool. So what do you think of my collection here? Not too bad, right?
I love it, Ryan.
Yeah?
I'm trying to pull up mine right now, but I don't think I'll be able to do it in time.
I was trying to...
Oh, wow. You've got some good ones. Wait.
Some good ones. Okay, so I minted these two. Look, I minted this one and that one, right? Which are great. They're great. Yeah. But like, I really wanted I wanted one of these either a Crypto Natives or a shadowy supercoder, and I wanted one specifically with like a bankless box. And so anyway, I found somebody in the DAO channel who's willing to like just, you know, sell me one that wasn't posted in the market. So I did that. And then I also bought this, which
is a great one.
Yeah. It's like, it's rare. It's got this interesting skin. It's a creative number 35. Anyway, it's really fun. I know you had a lot of fun too. So do you have yours? Can I pull yours up?
Yeah, I just sent you my NFT address in the chat. So if you want to paste that into OpenSea, it'll take you there because I also like mine. One of the cool things like you said, in the Discord, felt very sustainable. Felt really great.
Oh, yep. There it is. Trustless State.
There
okay.
It is. Yeah. And then, like, the thing is, like, I made a joke in the Discord, like, these DAO punks are going to simultaneously be with zero and also infinity.
Yeah.
Because
no one wants to
someone sold me one. Oh, I got a new one. Oh, bottom one. Yeah.
The PJs?
Yeah. Ultrasound Summer.
Oh,
yeah,
dude,
these
aren't PJs. These are Ultrasound Summer. Yeah, that's a good one, man. That was another one on top of my list. But yeah, tell me about which ones did you mint?
I minted the left, the top left two, the ones with the orange backgrounds. Yeah. And then the other three that I bought. I offered a guy 3.5 ETH and a trade on one of the CryptoPunk or DAO punks that I already had. And he was like, no, man, like, it would be really nice to have that ETH, but it was too sentimental value. Like, and I had this conversation like three times. Like another person's like, no, like that's a nice offer, but like I want to give it to my wife. And so like no one's selling me the DAO punks that I want, right?
So I have a list of a few others that I'd love to get, but I'm just not seeing them on the secondary market, and offers aren't going through. This is this is probably my favorite in your collection here.
That's my bankless ninja. I call that my V for Vendetta DAO punk because he looks like he's about to hack a bank.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. This one looks good too. That looks like
super cool. Yeah.
Anyway, I guess I'm down the NFT rabbit hole now. I guess Turtles was kind of my first experience with the DAO punks. You know, I got some like a few other things, but
I'm glad the turtles are in the rear view mirror, Ryan.
I haven't sold a turtle. Turtles will come back, okay, David? But you know, got to give it a rest after dressing like a turtle last week. All right. Hope listeners are ready for the meme of the week. Let's finish this thing out. Meme of the week. What is this from Nifty Nod, David?
Yeah, he says, can't unsee it anymore. And we have Netflix, Google, Meta, Instagram. And if you are looking at this, it very clearly spells out NGMI, as in not gonna make it. Now, I think Netflix might have got some collateral damage here. I don't have any problems with Netflix. I mean,
it was an N. We needed an N, okay?
Yeah, we needed an N. But yeah, all these Web2 companies, not gonna make it. I'm just not gonna make it.
That's awesome. Definitely the meme of the week. I think maybe the meme of the next era, the next decade. We'll have to see what happens. Of course, guys. None of this has been financial advice. ETH is risky. DeFi is risky. You could lose what you put in. All of crypto is risky, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but thanks for joining us on the Bankless journey.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed the video. If you did, head over to Bankless HQ right now to develop your crypto investing skills and learn how to free yourself from banks and gain your financial independence. We recommend joining our daily newsletter, podcast, and community as a Bankless Premium subscriber to get the most out of your Bankless experience. You'll get access to our market analysis, our alpha leaks, and exclusive content, and even the Bankless token for airdrops, raffles, and unlocks. If you're interested in crypto, the Bankless community is where you want to be. Click the link in the description to become a Bankless Premium subscriber today. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the channel for in-depth interviews with industry leaders, Ask Me Anythings, and weekly roll-ups where we summarize the week in crypto and other fantastic content. Thanks everyone for watching and being on the journey as we build out the Bankless Nation.